Rev Dr. Mitri Raheb from Bethlehem next week. Bye-bye. Media distorted. We come and listen and
supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. You're listening to WORT Madison. Stay tuned for Mel and Floyd. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. Sugar and spine, I feel nice. A sugar and spine, so nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I'm glad you turned that music down. I thought you were at a dance right out of the studio.
Yeah,
there.
I was doing the Donald Trump dance. Yeah. Here with the, yeah. Oh, I won't describe it in any more detail than that.
Yeah, they've had various descriptions of it. Some a little more blue than others, but yeah. At the same time, yeah. Anyway, I do wonder why he continues to use, I guess it's just from the 70s, right, which is a heyday.
YMCA.
YMCA. I mean, has he listened to the message? You know,
it's like a peppy, fun party song.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. You might even say festive.
Getting closer.
A little odd.
I don't know.
Who knows? I don't get anything about anything. Okay, this was great. So I've been telling people for years that one of the things about growing up in Eastern Kentucky, as I did, is I know exactly what people are going to say before they say something nuts. Because I heard this in my entire life. Somebody would say, I don't know nothing about nothing, but here's the truth about everything.
Yeah.
I literally saw somebody on TikTok doing this, where there are these guys, they go around and they interview people who are at Trump rallies, and they ask them questions about why they believe the things they believe. So, So the Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? You know, garbagey Taylor mean. She's been putting out this thing about how they control the weather,
right?
And so they
everybody
asked,
knows that.
They asked this woman who was in line to go see the leader. And they said, well, now, you know, what's with this, controlling the hurricanes thing. And she said, well, I'm no expert, but, and I thought, you should stop it. I'm no expert. Stop right there. And of course, she went on to say, I don't know how they do it. They seed the clouds or something. And she came up with something. I don't know what she, saw the Rainmaker once when she was a kid or something.
Sure.
I don't know what it was. But anyway, they've got a secret method of doing this.
Yeah.
But I think your theory is much better. Marjorie's also indicated that when bad weather has happened, that it's because of God.
Right.
And I think we all know what's happening. Yeah. I think that people are being punished for worshiping a false idol. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Marjorie.
Well, it's whatever's convenient.
Yeah, you know? I know. It doesn't make any difference. You know, they don't believe
like, oh, it's
anyway.
It's because they're gay. You know, the hurricane goes through a red patch, so to speak, then it's the Democrats controlling the weather.
Right. And,
unfortunately, if they had a weather machine, is that what people would really do with it? They would let's destroy a big swath of Florida. Okay.
The question answers itself.
I take that back.
Don't go there.
No, but I mean, when they destroy stuff and kill people and cause all this devastation and disruption. And they would use it to make money, because that's what people do with advanced technologies.
Well, I was happy to hear, and maybe you were too, that 17 porn film actors on Monday announced that they had launched a campaign, a $100,000 ad campaign on porn sites. But they're warning about the Project 2025.
Yeah.
This is the Heritage Foundation's blueprint for a new Trump administration. And it's a lot of people have been talking about this. And one of the things that they had on there is that basically they want to put people who who purchased pornography in jail.
Right.
And which is interesting. I think this is fascinating because when you look at the major demographic that supports President Trump, it's guys. It's like a lot of guys.
A lot of young guys.
Yeah, a lot of young guys. And the thing is, according to the survey on American Life, the group of it's younger men are the biggest consumers. You might, I'm sure our listeners are shocked, of the industry's, quote, products. This is among men aged 18 to 29. 44% had watched pornography within the last month, that they can guess this.
Mm-hmm.
And among men aged 30 to 49, it was 57%. And age 50 to death, it was 150%. So. No, it was
just keeps going up.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it keeps going up. Yeah, it goes into impossible numbers. But I'm just like, you know, 23 days a week.
Yeah, but they're gonna run little ads or public service announcements, yeah, or whatever you call them, like before the videos.
Yeah.
With these guys, you know, when they're still paying attention.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was fascinated by this because I'm thinking it does seem like it's antithetical to what the dudes are all about, right? The dudes are all about, you know, the patriarchy, right? But this is kind of like this whole anti-pornography thing seems kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah, that. It's a weird mixture. And, yeah, you know, that's, I mean, the whole Project 2025, which Trump has distanced himself from. He says he's, yeah, you know, had nothing to do, yeah, with it.
He walked to the other side of the room.
Doesn't represent, although he did say this week that the guy who was kind of the architect of it, yeah, you know, an architect like George Costanza was, yeah, an architect. Did the Guggenheim. It didn't take that long.
Either. George, we're trying to have a civilization here, Jerry once said to him.
But anyway, this guy's described as the architect of the 2025,
yeah, sure,
plan. And Trump said, yeah, we'll have a nice position for him in my administration. And,
you know, Elon all the way down, yeah, to, you know, from the highest lord to the lowest serf, they know he's just a vessel.
Yeah.
I mean, why is Elon putting his multi-millions into this?
Yeah, because nobody looks at that and says, there's the guy. There's,
I want a hyper-capitalist hellscape, and I need the knuckle-draggers to vote for it.
Yeah,
you know?
So we just need to get rid of, well, you know, we need to get rid of regulations, yeah, and, yeah, you know, yeah, all this stuff that's holding us back.
Right.
And, you know, that's always the mythology that these things are, you know. But when you talk about regulations, really what it boils down to are things like environmental,
yeah,
protections, yeah, protections for workers, protections, right, for consumers.
Yeah. I mean, socially responsible capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
which is fine. I mean,
Harris says, I'm a capitalist. Well, who, you know, unfortunately, who isn't, who runs for office in this country, right? But the point is, there's different flavors, there's different versions,
right,
there are different parameters or boundaries,
yeah,
you can put on it. And,
yeah,
there's a group of people who want none, you know, and,
right,
that's,
right,
and Mellon Husk is one of them.
Yeah.
So
they have this religion, essentially, that, that the free market solves all problems, and
I think their religion is they're smarter than everybody else.
Well, that's the real religion, yeah, is that, you know, we really should be running things, we really should be, yeah, making the decisions, and don't, you know, be bothering asking these people, especially people who are like of, you know, quote, inferior races. I,
yeah,
mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
gotta talk about the genetics.
let's get into genetics.
I did notice he did not mention when he introduced the bouncing black bean of Elon Musk. I don't know if you saw those images.
I saw some pictures of
him.
He
was wearing like a black hat and a black, everything dressed in black, and he was bounding.
He looked like a Superman villain or something.
Yeah, well, he is a Superman villain. But at any rate, I mean, who he is Lex Luthor, right? I mean, come on, he's a multi-zillionaire who's trying to rule the world.
They used to compare him to Tony Stark, Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, he's this genius who came, but then it turned out that, well, he's not really.
But Trump mentioned his service and innovation in the auto industry, but did not mention electric cars. I thought that was interesting. He knows his crowd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he used to, you know, rail against electric cars, and, yeah, then he had a meeting with Muskie.
Yeah.
And apparently the check cleared, and all of a sudden he's kind of shut up about
that. Well, that's why the project 2025, people are going to get what they want.
Yeah. Oh, I mean
when he's, I don't care if he says I never heard of them.
Right, right.
Somebody's got to staff those.
It's like the three people he appointed to the Supreme Court last time. It's,
yeah,
like, I mean, he didn't have anything really to do with that.
Yeah.
I mean, they just gave him a name and, yeah, said, here, yeah, you know, and he's like
Putin does.
He's like a train.
A little higher, Donald.
Donald, I need some COVID testing machines. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, I can get some for you.
The tough guy who's basically just everybody's factotum, you know, because he's too stupid to know he's stupid.
Yeah.
So there he is. But that's a fearful thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So. The people behind the curtain you got to watch
There's
out for.
A famous quote from Annie Leibovitz who says, he's just incredibly stupid. You have no idea how stupid he is. I mean, I'm not kidding. He's really the stupidest person you could ever meet.
Well, he's made some more, by the way, tax cut promises. Who wants cake? which, again, a promise from Donald Trump. I mean, you know, how many times has he declared bankruptcy? So he promised that he would reduce taxes for Americans living abroad. Or living with abroad, as the case may be. That's probably what he thought it was. It's the latest in an expensive string of tax cuts that he's promised to different voting groups. So right now, Americans who live outside the U.S. still have to file tax returns with the IRS. And that means that some people who live abroad are paying taxes to both the U.S. and, I don't know, France or wherever they're living. And other countries, many other countries also collect taxes from people living and working within their borders, but not on their citizens living abroad. So it's not like it's an unheard of thing, right? But guess who is most affected by this? High-income Americans living in countries with low taxes.
Sure.
Are more likely to owe additional taxes in the U.S. So if you've escaped to some, you know, umbrella stand or wherever it is you live, and there's no taxes there, then you still have to pay American tax. Well, that's an insult to the great ones. So they, have, of course, don't want to have that.
Yeah.
And I guess he felt like this would be attractive, but, you know, it's attracted the people that want him. So
yeah. Well, he's just at the point of throwing candy out.
Yeah.
I mean, he tried.
Who wants cake?
He tried to back off on the abortion issue a few weeks ago. It didn't really go very well, but it was like, well, I'm, you know, everybody wants choice. That's what we want here.
That noise you hear is him backing up.
Beep, beep, beep.
They actually do have a beep sound for when he backs up, because he might crush something without realizing.
Well, that's just flatulence.
I saw a headline somewhere, or I was online or something.
And he farted during his speech.
Was that a real thing?
I don't know. I saw the headline. I didn't have the nerve to click on it.
Yeah, it's like, most sense he's made all year.
He's just like us.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
He was on, you know, apparently at his rallies, which, you know, so to speak. He's getting stranger. I mean, he was on some strange thing, the last one, about circles and Joe Biden landing things on circles. And I don't know if he was talking about spaceships or what, but he was just...
Wow.
And then he started talking about Obama, and he said he thinks Obama's going to vote for him. And
yeah, that's why he's in Pennsylvania, stumping for Harris.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a joke. I mean,
I mean, that's the thing. He always says it's a joke.
He's like kind of a washed up 60s or 70s comedian, you know, who's you know, telling these
and now Shecky Green
horrible old racist jokes, and then he like squirts somebody with the seltzer, and then you know, then they bring out the June Allison dancers, and you know, you got a show.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
Those things don't hold up. Have you ever watched one of those old comedy shows from the 60s?
How about some of the...
I mean, they were squirm producing at the time, right? But now they're excruciating.
Yeah. I mean, how about like the guys whose bit was that they were a drunk? Like, you know, those really did not age well.
Yeah.
I mean, Dean Martin's okay.
Because he really was one.
Because he really was. I mean, he wasn't pretending. But like the Foster Brooks,
very good.
And guys like that. And
memory lanes there.
The Arthur movies with Dudley Moore. Yeah. It was like, oh, this is funny. But I mean, that goes way back. I mean, Charlie Chaplin had stuff where people were drunks and you'd laugh at them. And,
Hardy har har. Now we know it causes cancer. So,
joke's on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of the campaigns, I got to tell you, I donated some money recently to one of the campaigns. I won't say which one because, you know, I like to stay impartial here.
Yep. And that's the meat of this program, impartiality.
And I know this is how fundraising works, but as soon as I gave them my paltry thing, it was like chum in the water.
They're like sharks.
Oh, we got one.
I smell the blood.
And I mean, I get it, but it's like, you know, just leave me alone for three seconds.
Yeah. I've watched some of the late night comedians, and all of them have made the same joke, which is an obvious one. That, you know, Kamala and I exchange messages frequently because she's constantly sending me, like, are you breaking up with me? Why aren't you sending me any money? What's the deal?
Here are my nudes. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I look at my feed and, you know, at work, and I have like 16 every morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
That's just when I get up.
And it's from all the different characters in the show, you know. It's, yeah, it's not just one, or just from the campaign. Right, it's like, right. I'm so-and-so, and oh, this is so, hi, I'm, you know, someone you thought was dead, and
well,
I want
money. I gotta tell you, though, they nationalized the campaigns on the Republican side. I mean, the thing, when I was in Ohio, last week visiting my Aunt Hilda, and I don't see her that often. It's a couple times a year, so that was fun.
Is the kitty still in the freezer? Or?
The kitty is long gone.
Okay, that's good.
But I got to tell you that I was watching late night TV before I went to sleep, and there was an ad against Sherrod Brown, the current senator from Ohio, who's running for re-election, against some, of course, multimillionaire jerk. And so and they had this thing, and you may have seen it, listeners, because it's identical to the one they're running against Tammy Baldwin right now.
Yeah.
You know, he's changed. You know, he used to be, you know, this thing, and then they showed a picture of him. Younger, yeah. And now he's this beat up old jerk who loves the left, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, and so then they go off on, you know, transgender this and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking your kids and changing their sexes before you know it.
They do it right at lunch hour there. Right?
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
At, you know, whatever teacher's got lunch duty there, they give them a scalpel. Exactly. And
Room 3 will go to the sex reassignment center. But I mean, it's obviously a scare tactic, but you know it's going to work with people. And they're putting hundreds of millions of dollars in it. And they basically just have the same commercial in every Senate race and just swap out the person,
swap in
somebody else. So when I get these things about Senator Tester and give some money, I think I'm not going to give money to a campaign for somebody in Montana. I'm saving my shekels for somebody here in Wisconsin. That's the way it works. They're my senator.
Right.
But, you know, of course, the other side doesn't have that feeling.
So. Well, they've farmed out a lot of their stuff. I mean, the Trump grift has taken a lot of the fundraising.
Right.
Oddly enough, since his daughter-in-law got put in charge of the RNC purse strings,
it's right into the trough now. Right into the trough.
But
belly up.
So a lot of this stuff is being done by the dark money, by the PACs, by the billionaires, and even they've even like kind of outsourced what's called the ground game, where you try to get people to show up to vote and do things like that. They've left that to the PACs and Elon Musk is involved in that.
That true American who has a South African accent.
I was so excited. I saw a Cybertruck. I was on the wild. It was great. It looked pretty natural. It was, you know, pulled over on the side of the road on fire. the owner was trapped inside. So, you know, I think
it's gonna work.
Just typical.
It's gonna work.
Do you see that some of the big insurance companies aren't even gonna touch those? Like Geico, which is a really big one. Yeah. And they said, no, those don't meet our standards for an insurable vehicle.
Right. And the gecko is setting the standards. So, you know, you really got to worry.
Or the caveman or whatever their ad is this week. And then several European countries said that these aren't, we can't have these driving on our roads. They're just too much of a monstrosity.
I love how everybody said, everybody on the right said that the vaccine that was put together to you know, help us combat COVID was an experiment on the American people. But technology like this comes out, and nobody thinks, well, that looks like a big experiment on the American people.
Right,
nobody even thinks about it.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook's a huge experiment on humanity, you know, and I don't really especially like what I've learned from that experiment.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Facebook, there's one of the problems with the hurricanes is that places like Facebook and Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, have been just swamps of misinformation,
sure.
and they're scaring people, you know, saying don't cooperate with FEMA or
yeah.
don't evacuate. And I mean, and it's driving the people crazy that you know are the emergency responders who are trying to take care of that.
I hear some strange
Somebody's
noise in the back.
Probably my kids.
There's somebody materializing here right in the studio.
Yeah, I got my little Star Trek, ringtone here. Oh, it's from a 917 number in New York.
Yeah, I wonder
Should
what
I
that
take
is.
That? But
we can, so Companion and I can't go down the road in our car because the Bluetooth or whatever the system is that's picking up on his phone is constantly pinging us for these calls. You know, people
yeah.
trying to
yeah.
kind of get through and get some money for the candidates.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So anyway, so I was talking about
yep.
the misinformation on the
sure,
weather.
Sure, yep.
And I actually saw an announcement from the Florida version of FEMA, the
yeah.
Florida Emergency Management people.
Yeah. Except theirs stands for mismanagement.
Well, they were imploring people yeah. to not shoot at the hurricane. Please
oh, man.
Do not shoot at the hurricane.
Yeah.
Well, you got to use a shotgun. You can't use a rifle.
Well, right.
You know, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that.
But
yeah, that's the way I grew up.
What would possess you to stand outside and shoot the hurricane?
You have to have some pretty low level understanding of what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that's...
Well, Trump wanted to bomb them. He wanted to drop nukes on the hurricanes when
he'd never heard of a Category 5. I saw one of the late night hosts was showing how many times he'd said that line.
Yeah.
Every time there was I've never even heard of a Category
yeah,
5.
It's I know. Like, there was such a thing.
He
yeah.
said that at least you know,
right. yeah.
a dozen times.
I remember him saying that. Yeah. When he was in office. And
yeah.
And he also said that no one expected a hurricanes this time of year. And it's like, what, in the middle of hurricane season?
Yeah, we just call it that for fun.
Yeah.
You know?
But, I mean, they can't even take that tiny step of acknowledging, oh, this hurricane is bad,
yeah.
you know, without, you know, because then you start maybe having to acknowledge things like climate change.
Well, that's the thing about all this crazy conspiracy theory stuff is that newscasters, weather forecasters, and meteorologists are getting death threats.
I saw that.
And it's just because they're reporting on what's happening. And if they say things like, because this is it, if you can't understand and don't want the realities in front of you, then what do? You kill the messenger, right? I mean, that's the entire strategy right now for these conspiracy theorists. Everything, eliminate any trace of an opposite point of view because they can't fight against it when it's so obvious. So they have to stop people that are saying it out loud. That's where I start to feel like we're moving into fascism.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, these people are getting death threats because they're simply reporting and saying how severe it is and how unusual it is, and they're not reporting on the fact that the Democrats and their Jew allies or whatever crazy things these people are saying are creating them through some kind of weather machine or
yeah.
something. You know, they're acting like it's a real thing or something. You know? I mean, what do you do with that situation? I mean, we really have. You know, I just had this feeling like civilization was the little engine that could, and it got about halfway up the hill, and it just went, nope, sliding back down. I mean, it's like we're living in the Middle Ages or something. Like, we did manage to pull ourselves up out of the muck and figure out how to understand the way the world's put together.
And to work together.
Yeah, and it isn't by just making it up. It's by careful, patient, very skeptical, trial and error, making sure you can repeat the experiment, having a bunch of other people look over your work, not jump to conclusions because it sounds wonderful, it makes you feel good, nothing like that. I mean, it is a discipline, and there are some people that do it, and they're getting money to do it for the rest of us, and they have responsibilities, and yes, they sometimes screw up, but generally, that's the most successful way. I think every one of those people should just take their cell phones and smash it with a hammer, because that's, you know, where do you think you got that from, you know? I mean, it's that patient method of figuring out. I mean, climatologists weren't even willing to say that climate change was as severe as it's turned out to be because the probabilities weren't high enough. They weren't like 96% likely, you know,
mm-hmm.
whereas somebody just makes something up because it occurs to them one day, and
yeah.
before you know it, half the people in the country believe it.
Yeah.
So. It's again, I just feel like we're sliding backwards.
Right. 35 Republican senators voted against FEMA funding recently.
Oh, yeah.
Eight are up for re-election. Here's some of the familiar names.
I bet Ted Cruz is on.
Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee.
Yeah. Oh, she's a
Ted Cruz.
She's a number.
Josh Howley, Rick Scott from Florida.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, these are all places where you know you'd think they might want some some resources to.
Well, they'll pretend, but it's all performative.
Yeah.
They'll, just like with the Biden, you know. Construction, you know, bill and everything. They'll take the benefit of it and then pretend like it. You know, well, they didn't come from that.
Oh, I mean, I've seen tweets from there was a representative from like the Dubuque area talking about the great new locks they've got on the Mississippi and everything. And then you know, of course, the first response was, "Well, you voted against this."
Yeah. Well, and I remember that poll they did in Kentucky during Obamacare when Obamacare got, you know, and they asked people. You know, hey, what about your health care? And I said, well, there's this wonderful new thing where you can get, you know, help getting insurance and blah, blah, blah. He said, do you know that's Obamacare? I was like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, Trump and others were saying this week that, you know, Biden's been holding back the money and the resources and, you know, because these are Republican areas. It turns out when Trump was in the White House, he did exactly that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, when I think it was Georgia because they had a Democratic governor at the time. And,
well, he accused them of taking money from FEMA and putting it into immigration stuff.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did when he was president.
Yeah.
Except he was doing it, you know, to keep people out and put them in cages. But yeah, I mean, it's so obvious to anybody that knows anything about what's going on that everything he says is just a projection or an inversion of, you know, I did this and now you're probably doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we talked about last week. You mentioned last week those Bibles in Oklahoma, and we kind of got this ahead of the game. It turns out that the specifications, the bid specifications, really only fit one currently published Bible, and that is the one endorsed by former President Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
It costs $60, of course, a pop. Mr. Trump receives royalties from the sales of these Bibles. It's called the Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA Bible. And his financial disclosure reports filed in August. I'm surprised that he even does this. But it shows that so far he's made $300,000 from the God Bless the USA Bible since he endorsed it. And the specifications that you talked about last week, Mel, were especially interesting to a group called Oklahoma Watch, which is a nonprofit news organization. And they were basically, it was a little suspicious that they are so completely tailored to basically Mr. Trump's endorsed Bible, copy of the Bible.
There is an effort to redo that bid and open it up more. But also stories came out this week that those Bibles, the Trump Bibles, the Lee Greenwood Bibles,
Trump authorized,
stamped on them.
He branded it. It's like he does everything.
Yeah, but they're printed in China.
Nice. Of course they are. Why did I not think that they wouldn't be?
Yeah, and they cost $3 a piece to make.
Yeah.
And they sell them for 60? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Welcome to it. It's what you're going to get. You know, this is just it in a nutshell. Very nice. I don't even think fundamentalists use the King James Version anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at most of the, I mean, there are.
So that's the one with the thous and the these. And
there's a translation. I think the Jehovah's Witnesses use called the New World Translation. That's fairly popular with people that are getting really down and dirty with the Bible. You know, I want it to be accessible to the average person.
Yeah, it's just the whole language. Idea. I mean, there's nothing magical about the language, you know, used during that period of time.
No, that's just exactly. Just a slice of human history.
I talked to somebody one time who was you know, an intelligent person, and she was very religious, and she was surprised when she found out, when I told her that people wrote the Bible, you know, like humans wrote the Bible, and you know, that they had committees and they had arguments about it, and they had all kinds of books, and they brought them all in and they shuffled through and said, let's staple this one to this one.
If you think they were inspired, somebody had to decide that was inspired.
Right.
I mean, they didn't seal the canon until fairly late in the church. I mean, we're talking early Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there was lots of fights, and we only know how bad it was. I mean, how many different ones there were. in the 20th century because we found copies of a lot of the other ones. You know, mm-hmm. there's a book of Judas. There's a book of Mary Magdalene. There's,
right.
I mean, all, especially the book of Thomas, which is supposedly the sayings of Jesus, completely different from what ended up being canonical.
Isn't the Thomas one just like kind of like everybody be nice to everybody and be mellow and
weird because I don't like the Jesus that's portrayed there, I can tell you that, because he's kind of a smarty pants who thinks he knows everything and it's like, oh, you dumb humans, you don't even get it, do you? You know? I mean, it's like, it really is kind of an elitist.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's very interesting.
Never read it.
Yeah.
But,
it's kind of strange.
I did read some of the Gospel of Peter. That's like a comic book. That's great. Because Peter has a duel with a wizard in there.
Yeah, I know.
And he prays and he knocks the wizard's flying over this village, harassing it. So Peter prays and God smites the wizard and he smashes down and breaks every bone in his body. Right. It's like Evel Knievel. He breaks every bone in his body when he falls.
Well, to their credit, I mean, I think that the church fathers, that was what they were using, was a standard like that. There's lots of stories about the youth of Jesus as well that are very similar to that, where he's doing all kinds of weird, like, little, almost like witchcraft kind of things that are, you know, kind of, or superpowered things we would think of today. And to their credit, they thought that those things were A, too pagan-y.
You know, that
sounds too much like paganism.
Sure.
But B, also kind of inelegant, you know, kind of icky and weird. So they had a standard. It wasn't necessarily a bad standard.
Mm-hmm.
But that meant they had to come up with a theology and they had to come up with what it meant to have a standard and stuff. And those are all human inventions.
Yeah.
That was the best.
And the tithing. They had to come up with the tithing.
Right, exactly. Well, I do remember that when my friends the Prados had me to visit one time, and they had some Jehovah's Witnesses that were coming to talk with them, and they're very accepting, open people, my friends are. And so they invited them in, and they said, could you come and talk with our friends, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the next time? And I said, be happy to. And so the two things I asked them was, one, now you don't believe in any of the church councils, right? And they're like, right, we don't believe that. And I said, well, you do realize that one of the church councils was the one where they decided what the Bible was going to be, right? So that was the first one. I mean, I hate to play
all
gotcha.
All these gotcha questions.
Yeah, gotcha questions. But then the other one was, now you guys think the end of the world is coming, right? And they're like, yeah, it's going to be soon. I said, well, didn't you say it was going to end in 1914? Which I admit was not a good year. And it was so funny because it was a husband and wife tag team. And the husband was like, he said, well, yeah. And she said, no, that's what our enemies say about us. And I thought, wow, they're going to have an interesting, prayerful discussion when they get home, because he knew what the next question was, which is, if you got it wrong once, couldn't you get it wrong again?
Yeah.
You know, when she knew that that was coming, and she was a good debater. He was a little bit more honest.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, all these things are, you look at that, it's like, yeah, it's all people kind of had to make these decisions about, even if you think it was inspired, you had to have somebody make the decision which one was.
Yeah. Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org.
Org.
Org. you might be using the WORT app, which is very handy. I'd recommend that. That's free. And you might be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up in the archives page. And thanks to our pal Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you can listen via pod through Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your pods. All right, we're going to take a brief break, play some announcements, and then come back with, I don't know, you got anything good?
Oh, I got a couple of things here.
Since we haven't really used the news story yet.
Well, you know, one I have is, I don't know if I'll do this. I have a bunch of quotes from, I don't want to use this. A bunch of quotes from stupid stuff Trump's been saying. I don't want to do that.
We only have half an hour left. All right, we'll be back. You listen to these announcements and just do whatever they tell you to do.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Madison Public Theater and Oracular Studios invite you to their production of The Untold Story of the Collier Brothers, opening October 11th and running through October 26th at the Bartell Theater. Written and directed by Finn Gallagher, this is the inaugural show of the Madison Public Theater. Homer and Langley Collier live in 1930s Harlem and are famous for their hoarding and eccentric tendencies. Newspaper reporters scheme for an interview or even just a photograph of the inside of their brownstone. Homer, the elder brother, hasn't been seen publicly in years. Langley is even rebuilding a Model T Ford in the living room. What's most interesting about this story? It's true. The Collier brothers were real media sensations for many years, until their own tripwires unfortunately got the best of them. Two brothers, 100 tons of junk, and one sensational story. That's The Untold Story of the Collier Brothers, running October 11th through October 26th at the Bartell Theater. More information can be found at thebartelltheater.org. You're listening to WORT Madison.
And we're back.
I have to say that the Collier brothers are actually, in my family, we have pictures of them on the wall, you know. I mean, everybody in my family is a hoarder, like you would not believe. So, the whole idea, it's like, what, they got 12 tons of garbage? Well, yeah.
Who doesn't?
Model T in the living room? Sure. That's just us all the way down, so, you know.
Well, when you're poor, I mean, you think, well, I might need this someday.
You never know. Come on. Yeah, I got to hang on to it.
This cap snaffler or whatever, yeah. Whatever it is.
Cap snaffler.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. I think it should be. It sounds pretty thingy.
Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest weakness are books. I just have books everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm running out of shelf space. And I don't know what's going to happen when I retire, because I'm going to have so many books. I feel sorry for the woman that lives below us, because the ceiling is going to start bulging at some point.
So, hey, you mentioned last week that you had a colonoscopy.
Yes.
And we got an email at the melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com from Paul.
All the hard-hitting stories.
Yeah. And he says, your colonoscopy stories reminded me of two funny stories from my last one.
First, yeah, colonoscopies.
We're all going to share colonoscopy stories. He says, first of all, I work at a hospital.
Yeah.
And one of my neighbors happens to work there. She happened to be one of the nurses assisting. Yeah. Says, when I saw her later in the recovery room, I tried really hard to not to say this, but I asked her, see anything you like back there?
Oh, yikes.
Also, while in the recovery room, one of the nurses gave me the oddest compliment. She said, thank you for doing such a great job cleansing your colon.
I got compliments on that, too. It was on when I went to my chart and was looking at, you know, all the information. The doctor noted my adherence to the protocols and complimented me on that. So, I mean, I took it very seriously, you know. I empathized with his situation. So.
I imagine. Yeah, it probably varies quite a bit. So, well, when I went in for my surgery a couple months ago, and they were checking me in, and the nurse was asking me all this stuff. Have you done this? Because there's like a checklist of stuff.
Yep.
And I said, yeah, you know, and I got to the end of the checklist and I had done everything. And I said, yeah, I follow the rules. And she goes, well, I'm glad somebody does. I'm sure they get people like, you know, going in for surgery and they stop and at McDonald's on the way and have a couple of McMuffins or something.
Not only do I not step on the grass, I wouldn't even think of stepping on the grass. I never entertained the possibility of stepping on the grass.
So in Portland, police officers pulled over this couple.
Okay.
They thought it was kind of suspicious, and they found a bag in there that was printed on it that said, definitely not a bag full of drugs.
Okay, that's how I would name my bag.
And the cops opened the bag that said, definitely not a bag full of drugs. And guess what it was full of?
Drugs.
Drugs.
Yipes. Good strategy.
It's like the old thing, you know, if you're an undercover cop, you have to tell me kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, they'll never look in here because it says not a bag full of drugs.
Right.
So.
Oh. So the Justice Department said this week on Tuesday, in fact, that it was considering asking a federal court to force Google to break off parts of its company or change its practices in order to eliminate its monopoly in searches, which could be a big deal for, of course, for Google. I think they're going to have two different companies, Go and Ogle. I think that's what they're that's no, they're not.
Ogle will be the more popular one.
Ogle will definitely be the popular one. That's right, yes. But yeah, it's Google is they're coming under pressure from the U.S. government because of their anti-competitive conduct. And you know, we used to be serious about this in the United States, going all the way back to the 1880s. So it's a time-honored tradition of worrying about bigness in our corporate life. But we've been kind of lax about that for the last bit, as we have been about a lot of other things. And of course, one of the things that will go away if the Republican candidate becomes president is probably stuff exactly like this. There was a judge of the, let's say, which the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia had actually ruled back in August, and you may remember because I remember talking about it on the show, that Google is a monopoly and has been acting like as one to maintain its monopoly. So they're talking about busting it up.
Well, Trump was talking this week about the good old days and his economic plan, if you want to call it a plan, but he was saying this would be like in the I'll give him credit for this. He said this would be like in the 1890s when he apparently thinks that was the golden age of it is for
the gilded age,
the 12 people on
it was actually
on
not
top.
Gold, it was just gilding.
according
to Mark Twain.
So he said that would be the model there.
We've been saying this for years. Yeah.
I know.
And now they're openly saying it.
Yeah. So it's like he's only saying it because of tariffs. It's like the only thing he seems to know is you slap a tariff on.
We've been joking about McKinleyonomics for years. Yeah. I mean, that was McKinley's big thing was the tariffs. So.
And it's got my I really probably should pay a little more attention to what he's saying because this brings in up my favorite. Law of all time. It's the Smoot-Hawley Act.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Smoot-Hawley Act.
Who doesn't? And, you know, once we go back to the tariff structure, can the gold standard be far behind?
I saw some follow-up on the story about that. And, of course, it was in the comments where somebody actually did some research, not the reporter.
Yeah.
But they said, during that era, we had two major panics.
Yeah.
And a smaller panic, and then eventually we got to the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So, you know, it worked swimmingly, apparently.
The one in the early 20th century, in the first decade of the 1900s, is especially egregious, but it might actually appeal to the vanity of some of these multi-billionaires because it was resolved by a lot of liquid capital being put up by J.P. Morgan. So basically, very, very rich people could step in and would have the last say in how the economy ran. Because if things got dicey, they would be like the Federal Reserve. It would be a privatized version of the Federal Reserve. But it was totally up to them, right? And they would exact their revenge or expect, sort of tacit agreement of complete adulation as a result.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's where these people want to go. I mean, that's exactly why we aren't there. We learned from that.
Yeah.
We built on that. We tried to make a structure which was more rational and had, you know, fewer
and
people.
And a little more stable.
More stable and had fewer people that could just call the shots for everybody else because that's not what it's like to live, presumably, in a democratic polity that so people have so much more power over others. But whatever.
Yeah. I think that his comments about that were in response to a question about food prices.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. You just spin the
wheel.
Let's
bring back William McKinley.
It's like...
Well, I got to tell you this worship of McKinley. What was his name? Phillips, the guy that wrote the Kevin Phillips that wrote the new emerging American majority or whatever back in the late 60s. He wrote a very laudatory short book about McKinley, saying that if the Republicans really wanted to do well in future elections, they should imitate William McKinley. So again, this has been knocking around in right wing circles for a while, and I'm sure Trump is just, overhearing that while they were playing golf or something. he was cheating at golf.
Well, he loves tariffs because he thinks it's free money.
He's
in favor of free money. But then I liked Kamala Harris. They run some ads, in response to that, and they say the Trump tax.
Yeah.
And they call them taxes, which is what they are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They just have.
I saw the vice president on Colbert. And, a lot of her...
I heard she was drinking a beer on there.
Yeah, she had a sip. But before that, I have to say that, there was a lot of, she's an ordinary politician. She's kind of talking away and stuff.
Right.
But she reached a moment where it was quite striking, where she was talking about what a traitor, basically, Trump is in terms of his... love of these foreign dictators, but also just in terms of the values that he possesses.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just kind of like the difference between normal and super subnormal, But you could tell she was genuinely angry.
Yeah.
And I thought that was and it really made her quite crisp in her articulation of what she believed.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Well, the reporters were talking to Joe Biden this week, and I think it was about the hurricanes and the misinformation.
Sure.
And Trump's contributing to that, of course. He's talking about the Democrats, withholding money or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the reporters said, "Well, do you think you could talk to him and ask him to stop he didn't say lying, but stop this misinformation?" And Biden just laughed. He goes, "You got to be kidding me."
Yeah, right. What world are you living in?
Donald, stop lying and stop breathing, too.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, there's a woman in Washington State, and she had a raccoon hanging around, and she liked the raccoon because they're cute and they're kind of fun little animals.
They're kind of greasy, I don't know.
You got to cook them longer, but you're from Kentucky, you should know that. So she started putting food out for the raccoon.
Yeah, that's what you do.
And all of a sudden, she didn't just have one raccoon; she had 100 raccoons.
They have a good network, don't they? I mean, they really... It's like a flash mob of raccoons.
They put marks on the side of the building, like the hobos during the Depression.
Yes, exactly.
And so she's got 100 raccoons now, and they're getting more and more aggressive because they kind of...
Because there's a limited supply.
It's their house
food.
Now, Oh, man. So don't feed the raccoons. So... Well, the coyotes were insane last night. I don't know. I'll take Clopsy out before bed.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes I can hear the coyotes, and they were just wild last night.
Clopsy, or as he's known to the coyotes, a tasty morsel.
I talk about how Clopsy likes to he gets aggravated when he sees dogs or some other animals on TV, and he starts growling, and if he gets really riled up, he'll lunge at the TV. The cute little hippo. Blanking on the name now.
Yeah.
But Song something or anyway.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Anyway, there was a
Moo something.
I think I was watching John Oliver, and he had a little story about the cute little hippo.
And
Clopsy went insane. he hates that hippo. Wants to kill that baby hippo. Well, the hippo was kind of nibbling on somebody or kind of gumming somebody, and he doesn't like that for some reason.
Yeah.
He's kind of protective of humans.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so he didn't like that. He also wants to fight the dragons like on Game of Thrones and stuff too.
I get that.
Yeah. My money would be on the dragons there.
Hey, Mount Everest.
Yes.
I have a little story about Mount Everest. Yeah. It's of course, the tallest mountain on the Earth. And they got bigger ones on Mars, by the way, so don't get too uppity about it. it's 29,032 feet above sea level. It's easily the world's tallest mountain by about 800 feet. But did you know that it's constantly getting taller?
No.
Yes. It's apparently the crust under the, or the, you know, the crust of the Earth,
it's pushing it
is
up,
able to float more easily atop an underlying mantle layer if this gets a little higher. So it's been adding, because, you know, India basically was an island that smashed into the Asian continent, and it's still involved. It's a slow motion impact, just like you see in the driving hazard, you know, videos, right? So it's still doing it, and so it goes up by about 50 to, it could be as much as 160 feet.
Really?
That it'll add.
Wow.
To this as it goes up, so it's constantly getting bigger. So it's more of a challenge every year. A little bit more of a challenge every year.
Take that, Edmund Hillary.
Yeah, exactly.
You had it easy.
So it's still growing. It's a combination of factors, including crustal rebound, which I get sometimes if I don't shower off.
You don't, don't do laundry.
Crustal rebound.
That's when you have to reuse your underwear when you haven't done your laundry.
That was something my parents used to fight about. Oh my God. My mom would be like, take off that underwear. My dad would wear his underwear for like, it's just the classic guy, you know, classic dad thing. He'd wear his underwear until my mother would like, you know, strip it off of him. It's like, what a deal.
Oh, that's funny. So, a new study finds that men with higher general intelligence are less likely to use aggressive tactics in romantic relationships.
Sure.
And are more likely to be committed and satisfied with their partners, showing that intelligence might play a bigger role in romance than previously thought.
Which would mean that it should be selected for, right?
Yeah, that would make sense.
If you don't have a power structure that's enforcing every man gets a woman, you know, incel style, just automatically, you know.
Dr. Strangelove style.
Dr. Strangelove. Then it seems like it would be selected for, you know, among other characteristics.
Yeah. So, I've always thought that, like, you know, you get, like, two attractive people are attracted to each other.
Sure.
And I thought we'd, like, would at some point split off into two different, you know, you have, like, the good-looking right. humans, and then the ugly humans.
Yeah.
Because the uglies would have to match
right.
up, too.
And, but you have to remember that not all attractive people have high self-confidence. I'm just lucky he's with me.
But apparently that hasn't really happened. And so so I think it's part of it is because the attractiveness is a very fragile thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you try to recreate that in the next generation, and you know the eye's a little bit off.
Yeah, one's a lot bigger than
you know,
the
you look at the royal family or something.
I think that part of that's there are elements of underlying elements of objectivity to what people find attractive, and not surprisingly, I mean, they've done studies cross-culturally. It's connected with health. And so if you do have, like, one eye that's really big and one eye that's really small, that probably means there's something wrong with you. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, in terms of, like, and you know, it's being governed by...
It's all for reproduction.
It's all for reproductive purposes, yeah.
That's so, all we are. We're just, like, worms.
Yeah.
You know?
But those... yeah, exactly. But those standards have a lot of variation, of course, of what counts as...
No, culturally.
Living large and being healthy. And,
yeah, so...
You know, so...
God, I watched some stupid horror movie the other night from like probably the late 70s, early 80s, and they had a scene with like a bunch of teenagers around a pool and stuff, and they were all like nice looking young people and stuff, but they weren't like superheroes like today they would be all like jacked up and they have all kinds of cosmetic surgery even at their age and the women would look like they were inflatable and the guys would look also like they're inflatable because they're full of steroids and it was really startling.
There was a series that was on I think Netflix that was based on a book and also was a musical called Fellow Travelers, and it was about the gay panic in the early 1950s. And it was a pretty well done. I mean, it was very close to the novel I read it many years ago. And it was a pretty well done series. But the number one problem was they had a lot of steamy sex scenes to, you know, bring the viewer in.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody looked like that in 1952. They just did not look like that. I mean, you know, there's no way. I mean, again, it's just like, and we don't know enough to know that they don't. But moreover, it's just like any movie, even people that are homely in a movie or meant to be are beautiful by anybody's normal standards. Right, so. You know, it's kind of like
slap some glasses on her.
Yeah, exactly. So
tie her hair up in a bun.
Yeah, exactly.
We can always let it down later.
But I was just like, no, nobody looked like that.
So it's like, you see like old videos or pictures of places like Muscle Beach and things like that. And they're
here's another one, Woodstock.
In good shape. Oh, yeah.
Woodstock. Everybody's running around naked. Nobody has a tattoo. Not one person
or
has
any
a tattoo.
Muscle or any muscle definition.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's just like, it's obvious that in terms of how we think we should look, that's altered in 50, 60 years.
Right.
Speaking of such things, a new study indicates that perhaps we really have reached the upper limit of humanity's lifespan.
Really?
According to medical research.
I've reached mine, I think.
Yep. There's lots of people that are living up to about 100 or so now, more than ever in the history of humanity, as far as we can tell. But it's probably a plateau. We really probably can't push much beyond that. And unless we've come up with something, some new technologies that basically mess with our body's willingness to regenerate or rejuvenate parts of ourselves, which kind of switches off or kind of goes into a quiescent mode as we age.
Yeah.
But we probably are kind of at the peak now. This was a study that was published in Nature, in a journal called Nature Aging, which I love that. So they looked at data on life expectancy at birth collected between 1990 and 2019 from places where people live the longest. And do you know where they live the longest?
Holland.
Australia. Well, that's a good guess, actually. Australia, France, Italy. It's because they drink so much wine.
Yeah.
Hong Kong,
they're
Japan,
on that Mediterranean diet.
South Korea, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland.
Okay.
And this is, again, one of those things about sliding back down the hill. Data from the U.S. was not included because the life expectancy here is so low.
Wow. So
yeah. That's how you know you're really got a good
country.
It's
been going down, really disturbing.
Yeah. So. They purposely said, that's an outlier. We're not going to include it.
Wow.
No, I mean, we're a perverse data point. You don't want it'll skew it too much. We're trying to look at countries where people are healthy and things work properly, and we're at the frontiers of contemporary medical treatment and things like that. So
in the civilized
screw
world,
screw the U.S. Yeah,
we got too many Big Macs and guns.
Yeah,
right. New study shows it could take over 40 years of those PFAS chemicals to leave the groundwater.
Yep.
And
I have that story too, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was they're looking in groundwater in North Carolina's Cumberland and Bladen counties, according from a study from North Carolina State. They sampled the groundwater and they noticed there was a huge area of PFAS contaminated water that affects the population. So,
this one was the story I have is from the New York Times, and it's in a section they have in their Tuesday Science section, where people just ask a rando question. And this one was, can I get forever chemicals out of my life? And the answer was basically, see the name of the chemical.
What do you not understand about forever? I mean, we're not talking like forever and the end of the universe.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
Heat death or something.
Yeah,
but
you know, it's we're
forever for your purposes.
Yeah, we named it that for a reason.
Yeah. We got a couple minutes left here. Homicides and non-fatal shootings continue to decline in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
mirroring
yes.
national trends.
Yeah,
that's not what I've heard.
Yeah,
I heard crime was just rampant.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Especially with immigrants.
It's got to be, because otherwise, why would we vote for the leader?
Right? Yeah. So I noticed when I was driving through, I don't know if I talked about this, but when I was driving like through Iowa and Missouri a couple weeks ago, they had a bunch of Trump signs up on the farmlands out there, farms. And but I noticed that, some of the Make America Great Again or whatever, but some of them said, Trump Vance, take back America.
Yeah.
Which was, that struck me as a little bit, And that was a little unnerving. It's like, because you think about that, and it's like, okay.
Someone took America
from you. Who took that?
Yeah.
And
they did.
Who are you going to take it back from?
Right.
And what does that mean?
No,
and it just was kind of a very creepy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's like, no, we had a Democrat in the White House, and we had a Democratic Senate and a Republican House. So really, you know, not a whole lot got done. I mean, some stuff got
and
done.
And a Supreme Court that's still
and a Supreme Court
living in the 1400s.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, who took what from you and when and how and what's the big deal? I mean, you know, they spent some money on infrastructure and they tried to forgive some student loans. Is that taking America from you?
I mean, yep, it is.
Oh, okay.
I just want to mention real briefly, I did see my favorite sign on the way to visiting my aunt in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
And that is when you go over the border into Indiana, you're dropping down from 80, 94 to 65.
Abandon hope, all ye who enter.
No, it says hell is real. There's a giant sign. And I keep, every time I see it, I think, you'd think that the Indiana Bureau of Tourism could come up with a better slogan. I mean, I acknowledge the reality, but really.
Hey, if the shoe fits, I mean. All right, we got to declare the weekend. Enjoy your weekend. It's like hot out there today. I mean, you know, for October.
Let's not even get on that topic.
It's like something's going on.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Something, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so all right, we got to get out of here. Pants, was great to see you. Thanks as always. So stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday On My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. And it is 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, October 11th.
In high school, my friend Charlie and I once poked into an abandoned Victorian house in our hometown. Up in the attic, we found a secret door to a space containing several boxes of books. One held 50 copies of The Age of Reason, Thomas Paine's 1794 treatise ridiculing the myths of Christian theology and the Bible. Hot, forbidden stuff. In Paine's day, the book had been widely banned. Charlie and I each took a copy to read. We found Paine's thoughts mind-opening, and then we did something that would be dangerous today. We gave the box of books to our town's library for public distribution. Amazingly, no one's head exploded, and no gaggle of fanatics demanded that our town's librarian be fired. The library just quietly and gladly received the books. Today, though, a few right-wing extremist groups roam our country trying to foment panic over books that critique everything from Christian nationalism to the corporate order, as well as books written by or about women, racism, or the LGBTQ community.